To Strengthen a Nation, The American Legion Story, Part 11. This publication shall be the torch, the beacon light, thrown into our hands by the Americans who fell in battle, and held as a unique and living monument to that other legion which did not come back. G.P. Putnam, Chairman of the American Legion Publication Committee, St. Louis Caucus, May 10, 1919. A unique and living monument. With a laudatory Western Union cablegram from General John Pershing on its cover, the first issue of the American Legion Weekly was a simple but varied affair, with articles about the organization's origins, its quick growth, the coming convention in Minneapolis, the popularity of boxing, the possibilities of transatlantic flight, and a World Series prediction from former New York Giants pitcher Christy Mathewson. Launched 100 years ago, it began as a house organ, but evolved into a general interest publication that has served readers a kaleidoscope of war stories, history, health, humor, interviews, and images that have made the magazine For a Strong America the number one best-read publication in the United States. This, the 1,480th issue, continues in that tradition. July 4th, 1919, issue 1, number 1, of the American Legion Weekly is published. The introductory column is written by General John Pershing. George A. White, one of the four officers who met with Theodore Roosevelt Jr. in January to begin plans for the organization, is identified as founder of the publication. The Legion is destined to be of tremendous value in fostering the ideals and purposes for which we fought, Pershing writes in the inaugural issue. The folios. The magazine has had three different names and many different mastheads in the past century. The American Legion Weekly, July 4th, 1919 to June 18th, 1926. The American Legion Monthly, July 1926 to June 1936. The American Legion Magazine, July 1936 to present. November 10, 1919. Following the decision to name Indianapolis the permanent home of the national organization, American Legion National Adjutant Lemuel Bowles announces that, as soon as practical, the American Legion Weekly Publishing Corporation will also have headquarters at Indianapolis. The magazine office, however, will remain based in New York City until 1976. Harold Ross, founder of The New Yorker, a high school dropout who began working for major daily newspapers in the West as a teenager, Private Harold Ross found himself in the middle of the Great War with the Army's 8th Engineers Railway Regiment and as a reporter for Stars and Stripes. He was in Paris in March 1919 and participated in the formative caucus of the organization. Following the war, Ross started The Home Sector, a weekly publication for veterans coming home from France. Following that, he was hired as editor of The American Legion Weekly, then based in New York City. There, Ross and his journalist wife, Jane C. Grant of The New York Times, ran in the nation's highest literary circles. He stayed with The American Legion Weekly until late 1924, when he and his wife collaborated to launch The New Yorker on February 21, 1925, which, according to some accounts, was planned in the offices of The American Legion Weekly. Ross quickly became a national magazine icon. He died of cancer in 1951 at the age of 59. No one can lay claim to originating the idea of a veterans association, because it was a consensus among the men of the armed forces of our nation. It was the result of what might be called the spontaneous opinion, caused by a fusing together in a common bond of the various elements of the service, just as spontaneous combustion is brought about by the joint action of certain chemical elements. George S. Wheat, The Birth of the Legion, 1919. G.P. Putnam's Sons. George Say Wheat. Navy Lieutenant George S. Wheat, a former reporter for the New York Herald and future vice president of United Aircraft Corporation, authored the first definitive book about the American Legion. An organizer of the Paris Caucus that formed the organization in March 1919, he had firsthand knowledge of the origins. In the first year of the American Legion Weekly, Wheat wrote colorful feature stories on the merchant mariners who confronted German U-boats, spy hunters of the Great War, perils of an evolving U.S. Navy that faced enemy pressure on turbulent seas, supernatural inspirations of wartime espionage, and other topics. His 1919 book, The Story of the American Legion, documented the anecdote of Lieutenant Colonel Theodore Roosevelt Jr.'s exchange with Sergeant William Patterson at an Army hospital, which is credited as the inspiration behind the creation of the organization. After the war, Wheat started a public relations agency in New York and applied his skills with the language and marketing at United until his death on December 25, 1937, at the age of 51. Marcus James, a.k.a. Quid. An Army captain in World War I, former newspaper writer Marcus James was an early director of the National American Legion Publicity Committee and a prolific staff writer for the American Legion Weekly and Monthly between 1923 and 1932. His 1924 A History of the American Legion remains a seminal book about the early organization. Later a contributing writer to The New Yorker, started by his former American Legion Weekly colleague Harold Ross, James wrote under the pseudonym Quid. He received two Pulitzer Prizes, one in 1930 for his biography of Sam Houston, and another in 1938 for The Life of Andrew Jackson, two volumes. Famous contributors: Robert Heinlein, science fiction author, aeronautical engineer and retired naval officer. Rebellion on the Moon, December 1949. Zora Neale Hurston, African-American novelist and anthropologist. I Saw Negro Votes Peddled, November 1950. Why the Negro Won't Buy Communism, June 1951. General Douglas MacArthur, The Citizen Soldier, January 1952. Paul Harvey, radio broadcaster, It Happened in Gastonia, June 1962. Isaac Asimov, science fiction author and biochemist, What Can We Expect of the Moon, March 1965. Farewell to Youth, December 1974. Life on a Space Settlement, September 1980. The Year 2000 and Beyond, January 1985. Ravages of Nature, February 1987. Ivan Duig, author and novelist, The Mapping of America, December 1978. Ronald Reagan, U.S. President and World War II Army Air Forces veteran, A Grateful Nation Remembers, November 1983. Alexander Haig, Secretary of State, White House Chief of Staff, and Korean War veteran, Balancing the NATO Triad, March 1981. J. Edgar Hoover, Backing Up the FBI, June 1944. God and Country or Communism, November 1957. Discipline or Barbarism, September 1958. Rear Admiral Jeremiah Denton, former U.S. Senator and Vietnam War POW, Putting Vietnam in Perspective, March 1980. Vice Admiral James Stockdale, What is Patriotism, July 1980. Lawrence Welk, musician, bandleader, and television show host, Morality is Not a Fad, December 1980. Stephen Ambrose, author and historian, The World War II Generation, September 1995. G.I. Joe, Person of the 20th Century, September 2001. September 1926, the American Legion Monthly advertises The Fighting Marine, a film starring heavyweight boxing champ and American Legion member Gene Tunney. May 1950, the American Legion magazine publishes a 16-page point-by-point objection to the Hoover Commission argument to reduce federal support of veterans, including cutting 16,000 hospital beds in a construction program already underway, and restrict VA health care only to those who came home with service-connected disabilities. The report becomes the Legion's official position on the Hoover Commission and its Citizens Committee, which was working to enact cost-cutting measures through Congress and executive orders. The American Legion launches a nationwide campaign to protect veterans' benefits and health care from the Commission's intention to economize. The campaign is in full swing and making national headlines from Washington to rural America when, on June 25th at 4 a.m., Korean time, communist forces cross the 38th parallel and invade the Republic of Korea. Within days of the invasion, U.S. military forces, under the flag of the United Nations, are back at war, and the national debate over cutting services for veterans is tabled for another time. Among the letters received are several from disabled soldiers expressing gratitude to the American Legion for taking up their cause. They were discouraged and disconsolate, feeling that they had been forgotten by a once grateful public. These letters are truly pathetic. The point they raise is pathetically true. The American public is grateful and patriotic and just, but it forgets easily in such matters. Lest They Forget, editorial, October 10, 1919. Published just 3 weeks after the Pearl Harbor attack, the January 1942 American Legion magazine calls for all members of the organization to give our utmost to our beloved country. National Commander Lynn Stombaugh reports that he has assured President Franklin D. Roosevelt that the Legion stands ready to serve under the direction of civil and military authorities. One instant he was still, cowering. The next, he exploded out of his corner. I grabbed for the knife, but before I touched it, he was on me. There was a whip of tentacles past the faceplate. A stream of expelled water hit me with fire hose force, hurling me backward over the chest. I caught one glimpse of him shooting through the door. He completely filled the opening. There was a sharp, scraping drag at the airline. Then I was alone. Virgil Burford. I've Tangled with the Octopus. November 1950. Many Americans financially able to shelterize are not doing so because they say they do not wish to face the world after the bomb. Others are not acting because they feel the Defense Department's statement, such attack is highly unlikely, is reassurance enough. Most Americans, in the money or not, are doing nothing. Dale Shaw, Should You Build a Shelter? June 1962. When asked how she felt as a wife and mother holding down a career in the military, Kathy responded, I just consider myself a working mother, much like any other woman who goes to an office or works in a supermarket. The only difference is I wear combat boots. In arms, the Ms. gains equality. March 1977. Agent Orange, specifically its dioxin contaminants, and the government's resolution of the problem go directly to the heart of every American's trust, or lack thereof, in this land's values and institutions. It is a focal point of anger for the Vietnam veteran, and of continuing dismay for Americans who see an unpopular war that, for the participants, refuses to end. It follows, then, that resolving the Agent Orange controversy is each Legionnaire's concern. From Agent Orange, Time Bomb or Dud, third in a three-part series, March 1982. Because these new-style terrorists care little about being judged in the court of world opinion, they often aim to inflict as much carnage as possible. They select their targets with little regard for whether the victims will be professional soldiers, like those Americans killed by the truck bomb in Saudi Arabia, or defenseless children. The new style terrorism has no single defining route, and we are left with the disturbing answer suggested by the Senate panel's conclusion, that it is not a question of if, but of when. Susan Katz Keating, We Lost New York Today, June 1997. Going town to town, door to door, asking tough, candid questions of VA directors, staff patients, and veterans in the community, I have gained a first-hand perspective on the status of VA healthcare. It is not a regional problem. It is a national crisis. Along the way, I have described my findings to the media. Reporters have been shocked. That's because much of the public thinks all veterans get all their health care for free. I have elevated this issue among veterans themselves. I also have made it clear that if we want change, if we believe, as the American Legion does, that this is a system worth saving, veterans must act now. No one else is going to solve the problem for us. We cannot look the other way. American Legion National Commander Ronald F. Conley, A System Worth Saving, The State of VA Healthcare in America, May 2003. Navy veteran Mike Fairman reached the summit of Mount Everest at 11 a.m., May 19, 2016, having climbed from a depth so low it nearly killed him. He returned home from war a half dozen years ago, with a head full of post-traumatic stress that triggered two suicide attempts on the same alcohol-fueled night. He spent 3 days in a hospital trying to reconcile what happened to convert his combat exposure as a corpsman with the 325th Marines in Afghanistan into a decision to end it all in Ohio. Fairman's ascent to the top of Everest was his tribute to the silently fallen veterans he has known who have committed suicide. The flag he carried to the summit bore their names. Beneath his parka, Fairman's tattooed arm displays the numbers 22, veteran suicides a day, 60 to 80, minutes between each, 8,000, veteran suicides a year, and minus one. That's me, he says. The Minefield, Alternative Routes of Recovery, September 2016. Richard Seeley Jones. His first role was executive secretary for the American Legion Endowment Committee, which raised $5 million in the mid-1920s to finance veterans' assistance and child welfare programs. Much of his early work in the magazine centered on the campaign and evolved to take up such issues as the need to establish a central federal agency to handle veterans' health care, which became the Veterans Administration. In 1946, Jones penned A History of the American Legion, which chronicled the organization's story through that point. Robert B. Pitkin. R.B. Pitkin's bylines in the American Legion magazine reach back to the 1940s. He wrote about the GI Bill, military history, natural disasters, and national conventions during his time at the magazine, which extended more than 30 years. His final magazine article was a November 1975 profile of newly elected American Legion National Commander Harry G. Wiles of Kansas. Pitkin was the son of Dr. Walter B. Pitkin, Columbia University journalism professor and author. Daniel S. Wheeler. A Navy veteran, Wheeler came to the American Legion magazine in 1979 and within 2 years was editor. He wrote about naval history, New Guinea, flag protection, and other topics. Having famously said that he once ran the magazine out of one drawer, Wheeler later led the organization's digital media evolution, rebuilding the national website, introducing social media and other developments, as executive director of national headquarters in Indianapolis. In October 2008, he was appointed to serve as National Adjutant of the American Legion. Bursts and Duds. The magazine's first three decades included a page called Bursts and Duds, full of reader jokes and anecdotes. During World War II, it made way for Wally's page, featuring strips by Abian Wally Walgren, the famous AEF cartoonist. Bursts and Duds reappeared in the form of Parting Shots in 1946, which continues today. Several officers and privates returning in a bus late one evening from the city were halted at the gate of camp by an MP with the familiar, "All enlisted men out." Sam, a private on the front seat, sat still. "What's the matter with you, boy? Why don't you get out?" demanded the MP. "Well, I'm not an enlisted man," replied Sam. "I was drafted." August 22, 1919. Late arrival. "What's the score?" "Early arrival. 0-0. Late arrival. "Must be a good game, huh?" "Early arrival. Dunno. Ain't started yet." October 8, 1920. Private Jackson had long been a thorn in the side of the mess sergeant, but at last they got together in an amicable what-are-you-going-to-do argument. "Where are you going after the war, Jack?" inquired the sarge. "I don't know exactly," replied the long-sufferer, "but one thing I know. I'm going somewhere where they don't call prunes fruit." October 14, 1921. Legionnaire Leon Schwartz of Mobile, Alabama, is telling one about a recent department convention at which a youth from Alabama Boys State was on the program for a speech. The boy made a fine, original address with a most acceptable delivery. When he finished, a Legionnaire congressman turned to several of his buddies and said, "I'm going to get that boy to write my speeches." "Good," exclaimed the comrade, "and get him to deliver them, too." November 1939. Legionnaire Gordon Needham of Gus Zellner Post 36, Kellogg, Idaho, says that while he was in the Veterans Hospital at Walla Walla, he became very friendly with a comrade, then well on the way to recovery. The veteran confided to Needham that he was about to be married. In fact, his bride-to-be would take him away from the hospital. The day of discharge arrived, and with it came the lady. She was all bubbling over with plans for the future. "We'll get going all right," she told a circle of well-wishers. "He has a small ranch and has made application for $30 a month government constipation." February 1942. Nick Scuti of Atlantic City, New Jersey, Post, says he saw this sign in a barber shop: "Army haircuts repaired." March 1943. Parting Shots. Advice to the ladies. One way for a girl to whip up a boy's interest is to give him a good eyelashing. October 1963. The mixed-up husband went to see a marriage counselor. "My wife has a very bad habit," he said. "She stays up until 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, and I can't break her of it." "What is she doing all that time?" asked the advisor. "Waiting for me to come home." April 1964. Why aren't plumbers' assistants called drainees? July 1969. A hippie doesn't ask much from life, just room and beard. June 1972. Plumber working on leaky pipes to homeowner. "It's even worse than I expected. This mess will put me in a higher tax bracket." November 1985. Television is a medium because it is neither rare nor well done. August 1991. One park ranger asked another, "What do we do if we see an endangered animal eating an endangered plant?" August 1997. Bumper sticker: "If you can read this, thank a teacher. And since it's in English, Thank a Marine. March 2005. If it's true that we're here to help others, what are the others here for? August 2013. Did you hear about the cowboy who got himself a dachshund? Everybody kept telling him to get a long little doggy. July 2015. A cartoon from March 1969. A woman, surrounded by a large group of small children, holding a sign saying, "Make love, not war." A bearded young man, with a sign reading "Peace," says to her, "It's not that we don't appreciate your efforts, Mrs. Bascom." Learn more online. The American Legion's digital archives house searchable issues of the American Legion magazine from 1919 to 2016, as well as other National Headquarters publications. Archive.legion.org.